Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Quick shout out to the BCTGM members out in Aurora, Colorado, who went out on strike today against Nabisco. And again, it's odd how a lot of these snack companies are finally, the workers have had enough of it after having lived through the pandemic. Just on Monday, you had BCTGM members in Portland, Oregon go on strike as well. Same story. I mean, this is an extraordinarily profitable company, especially thanks to the pandemic, wanting to pay poverty wages, but worse, wanting to close places down and move them to Mexico. In fact, they've closed two places, the one in Fairlawn, New Jersey, which is where I looked for all the Oreos. So it looks like I'm never going to have an Oreo again. And also one in Atlanta, Georgia. Good on you guys for going on strike. Hold them accountable. I do like Oreos, so I hope they're going to make them in the U.S. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on maybe a little of this, but more importantly, that thing that went on in Kansas with Frito-Lay and all the stories around that. I've asked Jordan Zacharin to come talk with us. Jordan is a media producer there at More Perfect Union. You can check out their website, perfectunion.us. Jordan, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on again, Rick.
So I'm looking at these, you know, in a time when there haven't been two strikes back to back in many places that I've seen, we're now looking at a lot of places going on strike in this moment.
Yeah, you know, it's like they said now, workers, despite not the minimum wage not rising, the Democrats messed up on that. They broke that promise. Workers have more leverage than they have in a very long time, and they are taking advantage of it, both in terms of demanding better wages and getting higher wages. And now, like, the average pay is $15 an hour, which is pretty incredible. But then also people who are at factories, who are at warehouses, people who have been without contracts for many years, finally going out on strike and, you know, asserting themselves. And it's really great to see. And, you know, it's not every strike is going to win big concessions, but the fact is they're doing it. And that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And look, you know, the reality is these guys are just trying to save their jobs. I mean, one of the things that Mondelez is trying to do is trying to move everything from the U.S. Down to Mexico. I mean, they closed that plant in Chicago years ago, which is where I got involved with check the label on the Oreo bag. Now they've closed Fairlawn, New Jersey, where they told me this is where we're going to make them. And they, you know, they closed Atlanta. Now they're talking about these. I may never eat another Oreo again.
Yeah, you know, what you realize is how many companies and how many brands these giant international companies own. You know, Mondelez owns so many snacks, crackers, everything. You know, they were with Kraft for a long time. They have that brand. And, you know, we're going to talk about Frito-Lay, and they are owned by PepsiCo, and they own just about every single thing you go to the grocery store for. It's, you know, a small sacrifice, but getting harder and harder to find a food that is not made by a multinational conglomerate that abuses its workers.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Frito-Lay strike. I got to be honest. I know I've been on strike myself. I know how difficult it is. I know the struggles that come along with it. It was a 3-week long strike, as I remember, which is, you know, you start getting into that, things start to hurt. But I gotta tell you, I don't think they got enough. You know, the fact that you went down from working 84 hours down to 72, I don't know that that's a great victory. I mean, a little bit. Tell me I'm wrong.
You know, I think approving the contract was definitely contentious. I within the union, they spent a while debating it. And I think it was a matter of people starting to cross the picket line. You know, people were starting to go back to work, which is always tough. It makes it hard. And, you know, a lot of the people were older folks who, you know, still had, who had a few years for retirement. You know, they wanted to just get through it. And, you know, I think that, you know, they had not struck there for like 20 plus years. And I think that this was, you know, unfortunately a time where they had, you know, the union, they don't have a great deal compared to a lot of the other unions. You know, Teamsters is the better, in Ohio, has a better deal than them. So yeah, they were working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. A lot of times people said they worked 5 straight months without a day off, just brutal conditions. And, you know, seeing photos from inside and talking to people who are inside, just the safety conditions are just appalling. No, they did not get nearly enough. I think that, you know, it goes to show that Kansas is a really tough place to strike. You know, it's very much a right to work state. I hate that term, but right to work. And it's become, you know, it was tough for them. And I think that the union maybe had, I don't think they were prepared for the amount of attention that was going to come for the strike and the amount of support they would have gotten nationally. The stuff they got, the contract they got, was the same thing that was offered by Frito-Lay at the outset of the strike. And so they would have had to wait a lot longer. You know, speaking with some people there, they got a 2-year contract, and I think there was a lot of people who were upset about it. I think a lot of people weren't able to vote because the hours that they were allowed to vote. And in 2 years from now, it may come that there's a bunch of younger workers there that are more willing to stand alone.
Yeah. Now, one of the guys, you guys, you know, exposed a story there that's gotten an awful lot of attention. This worker, Brandon Ingram, his name was. He was a Frito-Lay worker, somebody who was just doing his job, went over to push a dock plate button and ended up getting, you know, almost electrocuted. They take him to the hospital, probably the wrong hospital, you know, almost an hour away, which companies do. And then it's this horror story of you know, just big bad company trying to crush this guy who wants nothing more than to be able to say, hey, you know, I need to support my family.
Yeah, this guy Brandon, you know, I got to know his family pretty well, and he was a young Navy vet. He was, you know, working at Frito-Lay for years, and he had worked there, I think, for like 6 years at that point. His cousin worked there, his friends worked there, you know, all toiling under, this is in St. Louis, toiling under pretty rough conditions, but, you know, they made the best of it, and he was moving up at the company. And like you said, he hits a button, gets just electric shock throughout his body. And, you know, this had been, another guy told me recently, this button had been broken time and time again. You know, this had been a problem. They had loose wires there all the time. They used to just stamp them down with their feet. This was a known hazard, and he hits the button, you know, is gets the electric volts all throughout his body. It takes him 45 minutes to a company doctor, you know, not the doctor, not the, he says they passed 4 hospitals on the way there. And, you know, they said, oh, you're fine, not a big deal. His body just starts shutting down, right? Like, he's got just pains everywhere, and they battle him on what short-term disability he can have. Finally, he's able to get out, do that, but they will not pay for any of his medical bills. You know, he ends up with, electric shock. It's not like he broke his leg and, you know, smashed in a bunch of places. This thing had long-term consequences, changed the way his body worked. He starts having bulging discs in his back or in his neck, you know. That was a big deal. His esophagus had problems in his neck there and his jaw. He's got liver disease, which can happen with an electrocution, you know. So it wasn't – this all happened because he was hurt there. But they were able to raise these doubts that, oh, you know, it wasn't like a crane fell on him and broke his leg in half. And so they battle him. Sedgwick, the insurance company, which is infamous for doing this, they don't want to give anybody any money or any comp, follow him and his family. His wife, who's great in the video, if you guys see it, Melissa, she was a star of the show. She was in tears. They homeschool their kids now because they are being so constantly followed. We had lots of video, and we only put a little bit of it in the video we did, but of them just following them everywhere he went to try and say, oh, hey, look, you're walking with a cane, but why are you carrying this bag of groceries, you know? And it's just been this ongoing battle for him, and they will not settle. They will not give him, you know, they're trying to give him workers' comp for just a few years, but I mean, this guy's back, his body has just been decimated, and they don't want to give him a fair settlement.
No, and the sad thing is, and as horrible as this story is, and it is horrible, this is the reality for hundreds of thousands, if not a million workers in this country every year. The fact that these big companies have such power, such control, and in a lot of states, especially Republican-leaning, Republican-governed states, they've gone after and destroyed workers' compensation law. I know where I'm at in Pennsylvania. Every chance they get, they try and make it worse. And they've done a good job of making workers' comp worse in this state. I can't imagine what they've gotten away with in a state like Kansas.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, they have to have independent, they're Missouri, and independent medical boards, right? And medical exams, and that's a doctor generally paid by the insurance company or the employer. They've got, if you happen to have a, you know, medical exam board, they happen to have oftentimes a lot of nomination, a lot of people, a lot of members who also work for companies separately. So it's a very, very slanted system. It's a very terrible system. A lot of companies now just don't pay into workers' comp, generally speaking, and they don't have that kind of insurance anymore. And so that's happening in states like Oklahoma and Texas. And yeah, it's a disaster of a system. It's something we've been focusing on. You know, it's the fact that companies like Sedgwick, the insurance company, can just follow these people. They're allowed to film them because they're allowed to say, oh, you know, they want evidence that they could be committing fraud. It's the same thing with voter fraud, right? trying to convict people of who are just trying to live their lives, trying to, you know, make it through the day, trying to convict them of fraud when it's really the big companies or doing things like that. So it's a real disaster of a system. And like you said, it's so unfortunate that happens so often. You know, we got an influx of emails from folks that went through the same thing, whether they work for a postal service, FedEx, other places, you know, people coming up to them and saying, why are you doing this? Why are you carrying that? Why are you walking this way? And then running away, you know, where they have a camera or something like that.
Or
and
worse yet, you know, they set them up by giving them free stuff. We've seen, I've heard stories of sting operations where, hey, you won this. All you have to do is pick this up off the ground and walk away with it. All kinds of stupid stuff that they get away with.
Yeah, it's really terrible. And there's so often so little based on the way the system is and just the way, like, you know, it's tough to get a, you're going to go up against a huge corporate, a bunch of corporate lawyers, insurance lawyers, and you have one workers' comp lawyer who's doing his best or doing their best. It's often a David versus Goliath situation.
Yeah, I know. Now, how are they doing now? I mean, this guy's got, you know, lifelong disabilities. You know, when I watch the video, I'm going, you know, this is horribly tragic for any working person. But like I said, I actually know people who have gone through some of this stuff, and the money doesn't make it better. A couple of bucks isn't going to change this guy's life. He was injured on the job through their fault, and you know they're skating away from it. And I got to wonder, did they ever fix the button?
That I don't know, because he didn't last long at the job after that. You know, they tried to make him come back and just couldn't get through it. You know, I've kept in touch with the family since we came out the video. I think they were pretty overwhelmed. You know, no one was listening to them. And that's the thing. You know, these stories are a dime a dozen, but no one listens to them. And so I think by putting it out there, hopefully, you know, more people, more of this stuff comes to attention. The outrage that we saw at Frito-Lay for just this one little incident, not little incident, but this one singular incident, you know, it got a lot of national attention. I think they were a little overwhelmed, but, you know, they started to GoFundMe, you know, that we put the link out to. Didn't do much other than that, but we put up the link out to it. Over $140,000 people donated to them. Like, thousands of people chipped in. And again, like you said, does not fix what happened. They've been living with this hell in the last 4 years. He's permanently, you know, busted up his body. You know, he won't be able to do the same thing. I mean, this is a guy who's fit. He was a Navy vet. He was in his 30s. This is not going to bring everything back. His wife is now the sole breadwinner, and they raised all this money for her to start her own business or grow her small business that she's been trying to grow. And, you know, hopefully they can find some peace. You know, I don't know, you know, at Frito-Lay is, and they put out a statement, Frito-Lay, kind of a vague sort of evasive statement trying to get rid of the blame for themselves. But, you know, hopefully a judge sees this, hopefully it helps them in that way. But, you know, at least I think, being heard and getting some justice and having some that way and having people chip in and try and help them get back on their feet, you know, again, it's small compared to what's going to happen, you know, for the rest of his life and the kind of disabilities he's going to deal with. But hopefully, you know, there's a happy ending.
Yeah. And what's amazing to me is, you know, these big, powerful corporations, the rich and powerful, they always get to tell their side of things. They always get to tell their story. The rest of us, we struggle to be heard. And if it's not for organizations like More Perfect Union, if it's not for the work that you guys are doing, if it's not for, you know, programs like this, those stories never get told.
You know, what's amazing to me is that, and that's so true. And there's such brand loyalty, which is, you know, kind of a poisonous word, but for the most part, people were really responsive and in a good way to this video. But, you know, there's still people that are saying, oh, you know, like, he could be lying, or how do we know it's true? Or, you know, why would the company do that to him? And there's been a mass brainwashing, you know, this, you know, setting each other, people against each other on behalf of these giant corporations. So, you know,
And the thing is, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we want to believe the system's fair. We want to believe that in the event something happens, we'll be protected. And if we look at a story like this, it's got to be an outlier, because the system that we believe in has to work. And I go, look, it doesn't. It's broken from top to bottom, because much like you pointed out, you've got a Republican state, Republican governor, they've moved through and they've destroyed workers' comp, and they put their appointees on that board. It is a seriously tilted thing, because look, Republicans are against, and I hate making this as political and as simple and as cut and dry as it is, but it's been the Republicans who have been doing everything they can do to destroy the social safety net in this country, and workers' comp is part of that social safety net.
I mean, it's a huge part of it. I mean, if, you know, it's not just that you get a reward for being hurt, like, you're the rest of your life, you know, for this guy like Brandon. Now, some people, you know, they break their leg and they get some money to break up for the time they weren't at work. But a guy like Brandon, his life has changed. And you know, like you said, people want to believe the system is fair. They want to believe when they eat Oreos, they're not doing anything wrong because, you know, they probably work for a big corporation that gives them a hell of a time and everyone's pretty beaten down. But, you know, it's hopefully bringing these stories to light. You know, it's justice for one family, hopefully, you know, giving them some compensation and, you know, some, you know, having people listen to them. But hopefully it leads to more and more people coming forward, more and more people believing it's the case and, you know, demanding big companies take action.
Yeah. And look, I'm hoping these stories, by telling these stories and talking about these strikes and these conditions that these workers are struggling under. Because look, Nabisco, Frito-Lay, PepsiCo, these are Mondelez. These are big companies, wildly profitable. CEOs, you know, lining their pockets, you know, nickel and diming these people literally in some cases to death.
Yeah. Mondelez made $3.55 billion last year. They are trying to change the overtime scheme for the workers at the American factories. They want to make it so that they don't get overtime after 8 hours in a day. They have to hit a certain amount of time per week, you know, so they're trying to make people work longer shifts and then, you know, let them off without giving them overtime. They're trying to get rid of their regular weekends off.
And you know, the thing that's amazing to me, you know, if we learned our history in this country, we literally had people who died to get the 8 hour workday. And I grew up at a time where, you know, the 8 hour day was almost sacrosanct. And there was no question that you got overtime after 8 hours. And now you got these big companies who are, you know, it's now everybody's after 40 hours unless you have a union. Or now they're still, they've been trying for years to change it to where, well, let's go to what, 160 hours a month. So you can work 160 hours in 1 week and you can get the rest of the month off. I mean, it's crazy what we've allowed them to get away with.
Yeah. And, you know, there's, until now, there hasn't been much leverage workers have. And, you know, hopefully that, you know, I know the job market is going to be tightening up a little bit, but hopefully over the next bunch of months and, you know, hopefully with the PRO Act, get some of the elements of that in the reconciliation bill. Hopefully that does a bit of help as well.
Yeah, the website perfectunion.us. Tons of stories there. Good video stuff. You guys do really fantastic work, high quality stuff. I love it. I hope you'll come back and share some more of this with us, and keep us up to date on what's going on with this guy and if there's any way we can help.
Absolutely, we'll do it. Thanks so much, Rick.
Jordan, I appreciate the time. Again, make sure you check out the website, perfectunion.us. We'll get links out on social media on how you can do that. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Have you ever had a situation where you got hurt on the job? Did it go like this? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.